All right, let's start over. We are appreciative to our friends at Sports Research for making the Token CEO pod possible. This is the women's basketball episode, so I don't know if anyone listening to this is following the NCAA tournament. These women are incredible on the court. I don't know if using Sports Research can make you an elite college basketball player, but I would like to think that it can help you try. What's great about Sports Research is that they have all sorts of products. They've got collagen, they've got vitamins, they've got a little known product called Sweet Sweat, which is the secret weapon that helps athletes warm up faster, assist in recovery, and finish their workouts dripping in sweat. If you are on the fence about trying Sweet Sweat or getting anything from Sports Research, they're right now giving away 150 sticks of Sweet Sweat. Go to sportsresearch.com, add a stick to your basket, use code NRC at checkout, and you'll get it for free. That's sportsresearch.com, promo code NRC for a completely free Sweet Sweat stick. If you don't care about dripping in sweat and getting a great workout, you can buy anything from Sports Research with code TOKEN, and you can get 30% off. So thank you to Sports Research. Go to sportsresearch.com, use code NRC for a Sweet Sweat stick, and use code TOKEN for 30% off your order. So the NCAA women's basketball tournament is going strong. We're in the Elite Eight, which began yesterday. Spills into tonight, too. And what I'm fired about is we got to talk to some of the biggest names in the game, including Kim Mulkey, the legendary Baylor coach, the only person alive, man or woman, to win a national title as a player, an assistant coach, and a head coach. We've got Brenda Fries, which is the longtime beloved coach of the highly successful Maryland Terrapins. And then last but not least, we've got my current spirit animal. Ty Domi's got to move over a little bit. We've got everyone's favorite TikToker, newsbreaker, whistleblower, Sedona Prince of the Oregon Ducks. So womp womp, they lost on Sunday. But Sedona's got a great story to tell. There's so much to take away from all of these women. I think the biggest thing that I took away is just how fiery and strong each one of them are, how they've embraced the suck. So all of the adversity, the hurdles, the challenges, the problems, the lack of opportunity that's littered their paths, and that these are women who are making the most not only of the sport of basketball, but of their careers and of their lives. So I'm super excited for today's episode. I think there's a ton of wisdom being dropped here. I'm actually very curious to see what these women will do going forward. As always, huge thank you to New Balance for helping us to embrace the suck. Everybody knows you can either get lost in the suck and be passive to it, or you can embrace it and make the most of it. New Balance makes that possible in helping you go out and be your best self, whether it's going for a run, going for a walk, working out, focusing on your well-being, your competitive spirit, and your mood. So big thank you to New Balance for making this episode possible. First up, we've got Kim Mulkey, who is the head coach of the Baylor Bears women's basketball team.
Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
5'4"
Let's go.
I'm ready.
You're really only 5'4"
That's it. And whatever
month,
whatever month or year, don't ask my weight, COVID weight or post-COVID or pre-COVID.
Do you think the 5'4" contributes to you looking great in suits?
No, actually, I always have to hem them.
Oh, but the color, I mean, the pink one is insane. Well,
you know what? That suit's about 10 years old. Because of COVID, I didn't go buy any new clothes because most of the coaches are wearing warm-ups. Well, I can't break down. The closest I can get to a warm-up during a game is blue jeans. So I've worn a lot of blue jeans this year. And when I packed for San Antonio, I looked in my closet and I grabbed all the spring-looking outfits I could grab. And I just happened to grab that one and some shirts to go under it. And so I guess pastel is my look, if you ask people in the...
I think so. Wait, so let's actually talk about this. So what are you wearing, like jeans and a blazer?
This year it's been mostly jeans, and like maybe a Baylor pullover and things like that. Yeah.
Do you feel sometimes when I go to work, I work with all dudes. When I go to work in a frilly outfit, I feel weird about it. I feel more comfortable if I'm wearing like a dirty t-shirt and ripped jeans, which looks more like them. So how do you feel when you're like, what outfit puts you at your best for coaching, or do you give a shit?
You know, actually, when I go to work, no makeup, warm-ups at work, and I probably look worse than the rest of them. But yet when it's game time, I don't know. I just feel like that is my professionalism coming out. And I've always, you know, wanted to look professional, I guess. So I'm terrible. If you saw me during the week and, you know, at practices, you know, it's old sloppy warm-ups. In fact, I've worn those same warm-up, the shirt and the top, for the entire year this year.
Do you wash it?
Oh, hell yeah. Well, I'm not going to come
every time. Or are you like wearing it twice?
I wash it every day.
No way.
One of these that dries off with a towel and leaves it hanging, because people in their mind think, oh, well, it's not dirty. Hell, I wash clothes every day. Every day.
Do you wash your pajamas every night?
I am anal. I wash when I go
home.
When I get home from a long road trip, it can be 2 a.m. I'm going to unpack and everything's going to go in its place.
All right. I actually love that. I think that people leave their suitcase sitting around, there's something wrong with them.
Well, they think I'm anal, but, you know, and I'm not OCD. I'm just very neat. And that way, when I wake up the next morning, that's one less thing I have to do.
Okay. Is your office at Baylor neat?
I would say yes. But now I'm not into the buying of stuff. Like, I can't go and spend time in a store because, one, I don't want to do it, but I like nice things. So friends and family will see something in the store and they'll go, oh, I saw this outfit, girl, I'm gonna drop it off at your house. Now, they don't pay for the crap. I end up having to pay for it, of course. They don't look at price tags, but they know my style and they know the modern stuff that's out and all that. So they just take good care of me. They make sure I'm not outdated.
I love that. All right. So let's talk about your season. Let's talk about you being the queen of NCAA coaching. Like, what's up this season for Baylor?
Well, I'm not the queen of NCAA coaching.
Oh, I would argue with that, Kim.
Well, we've won a lot of championships, you know, of the current coaches and the current programs, excluding Pat Summitt's run at it. You know, we've been respected. We've won three, we've won 20 something Big 12 championships, and look, man, I have coached some of the greatest players in this game, and I still got a lot of energy. And as long as I'm healthy, I'm going to keep doing this. It's fun.
What made you a great player? You're a championship winner as a player, an assistant coach, and as a head coach, which is very rare. What made you great at each one of those things?
I think growing up, it's internal, your competitiveness. You find something that you're successful at and it just kind of, it feels good. And I started playing sports with Dixie Youth Baseball with the boys. And then I played Pony League Baseball. We didn't have all those travel softball teams and the AAU teams at a young age. And then when I got to high school, it was more AAU basketball. It just made me feel good to compete. I just love to compete. And was able to get a scholarship at the time. I chose Louisiana Tech, and women's basketball was a big deal then, and got talked into coaching. Hell, I wasn't going to do this. My degree's in business administration. I was working on my MBA. I received a postgraduate scholarship from the NCAA after the 84 Olympics, and was sitting in class working on my master's, and the president at the time sent the security, the cops, to come get me out of the class and said, come see him after class is over, and I did. And the man wouldn't take no for an answer. He said, I want you to at least try it for a year. I'm going to give the job to Leon Barmore and you go be his assistant. And needless to say, that man, bless his dead soul, he knew more about what I needed to be doing than I did. What makes you that way? I think you're born somewhat that way. I think then those you're around, I think I was around great coaches, Leon Barmore, Pat Summitt, Sonja Hogue. And they taught me the details of the game, and then being talked into becoming a coach and taking what you learned from them and incorporate it into your own personality and get to work. And man, I surround myself with people that are not yes people. I like to be challenged. I like trust and loyalty. But I like people around me who make me not think outside the box, but keep me young. I've got a mixture on my staff. I've had three head coaches on my staff before that were a part of my staff. I've got young, I've got older. I just kind of mix it up to keep me on my toes and keep me alert.
What kind of player do you like to coach? Well, like, what's your ideal player?
Well, talent's the first thing, man. It's obvious. Don't care what position you play. If you can ball, let's go do it. I like kids who are respectful. I like kids who are just intense. I like kids who buy into things. Now, that doesn't always happen, and that's hard in recruiting because you have limitations on just exactly how much you can get to know them. But I think kids want to win. I think most kids want to play for championships, and you got to have the right mixture. You can't have 15 on scholarship and they are all Americans, because you can't keep them all happy. So you have to have role players. You have to have several on there that are not only talented, but they accept their roles. You got to have those that understand the game, think like a coach. And then you got to have a staff around you that can pick up the pieces and whatever my deficiencies are, man, they can pick it up and help me as a coach. And I've had some great coaches. I've had some great players. And as long as I can put a product on that dang floor that's competitive and can help us win, I'll do it.
How do you think the game has changed? And how do you think the game has changed since you were playing or you were an assistant coach?
Well, I can tell you how it's changed since I played. You know, I was on the very first 1982 NCAA team, the very first one. And
how was the weight room?
You know what? We didn't lift weights.
I bet women weren't supposed to lift weights in 1982.
Yeah, back in 1982, you were in a class, and that was your weightlifting.
So yeah, they're like, please be pretty.
Yeah, things have changed. You know, back to what you originally asked me, how's the game changed? I think two things since I played: the three-point shot, the smaller basketball. Those are the things on the court. And then off the court is, man, you only really had one game that was ever televised, and that was the national championship game. Now you can pick up every game on some network somewhere. And so those are the things that have changed through the years.
Do you think about being a woman at work? I don't think about being a woman at work. People always ask me what it's like to be a woman in my job, and I'm like, I don't fucking think about being a woman ever. But do you think about that? You don't seem like you think about it.
Erica, I am as comfortable in a room of the biggest jock males you ever been around. You got to remember, I grew up playing sports in that dugout, all stars as a baseball player. And I'm as comfortable there, and I make them comfortable by who I am. I don't try to be somebody I'm not. I have a son and a daughter, and my daughter's friends would tell you growing up, she can be as dainty and as girly, but then on the other side, she's got this intense passion that she'll look at your ass in a minute and put you in your place. So I'm just real, is what my players like to say. You are the most real person I've ever been around, coach. And sometimes people can't handle that.
How do you deal when they can't handle that? You seem very blunt. Like,
don't you want people to?
I like bluntness. I would rather you be blunt with me all day long.
I think bluntness is be truthful. And I was coached by people that were blunt. And while you might say, well, man, I remember that, what it did is it motivated me. It didn't crush me. There's a difference with being blunt and being a person that belittles somebody. If you're blunt, you're blunt. And it's we like to say in growing up, put your big girl panties on and deal with it, you know. And that's kind of the way I did when I got shooed off of that Dixie Youth field because I was a girl, tears streaming down my face. That hurt, and I didn't understand it and thought it was wrong at the time, but I handled it in such a way that it was later taken care of. Mm-hmm. I couldn't, as a 12-year-old, take care of that. So you set examples throughout your life to help both young people, females, and just speak the truth. Because if you speak the truth, you don't have to worry every night. Well, who did I tell a lie to?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think one thing that's so shocking about you, and in a funny way, and I think the fact that it's shocking is wrong, is how much emotion you have on the court, and how I think there's this like perception that women should be restrained. And even in your profession, which I think is kind of a genderless profession because it's just majority men, but I like your spice. I think that you have a lot of energy, and I think you seem to have very little ability to contain yourself. But how do you think about that? Like, do you in retrospect see how pioneering you are just by virtue of who you are? Like, how do you think about that?
Well, I think it goes back to passion. You know, I'm 5'4" and a half. And I needed to be the little general on that floor, and I needed to direct people and point. I needed to be the coach on the floor. So you're brought up playing a position that's the quarterback on the court, just like in football. You can't have a passive quarterback that is not, you know, altering plays at the line of scrimmage, is not telling them in the huddle what to do. And so it just carries over to your coaching. You are passionate about something. Those kids feel it. Most of the time when you see me excited on the floor, who gets motivated by a passive person? I wouldn't want to play for a passive coach. I want a coach that challenges me, that is into it, that hurts with me, that's getting on a referee when he's just made a bad call or she's made a bad call. That's passion. It is a controlled passion. Some people may not agree with that, but it's a internal passion that when I can't do it anymore, I need to step away. Physically, I'm able to pump my fist. Physically, I'm able to you know, high five kids and chest bump them. And that keeps me young. And it also sends a message to those young people. Hey, the time has not passed me by.
Yeah, I love that. I'm like, you're like my spirit animal today. I'm like buying everything you're selling right now. All right, so let's talk about the bubble. Let's talk about the weight room and the COVID tests and the food. Like, does that piss you off? Are you like, hey, we've come a long way, baby? Like, where are you on this?
I'm a female. I have two eyes. I can look and I can see. I can write things down. I can observe things. And I'm taking notes. I am here to try to win a national championship first. And if I get involved in any of that right now, I'm cheating my players, and I'm cheating Baylor University, who pays me to win championships. That is what I'm doing. But please don't misunderstand that because I have not made statements like a lot of coaches, that I'm ignoring it. I will not ignore it. You're talking to a little.
This is back to 12-year-old baseball.
You got that right.
Yeah, this is 12-year-old baseball right now.
And I've lived a life that can tell a lot of stories. Erica, I lived through integration when the whole world took off and went to private schools and opened all the private schools. Little Kim Mulkey was getting on that bus, being sent to this school for second grade, this school for third grade. So my life's experiences, good or bad, have taught me how to absorb, watch, look, and see. And then I think the only fair thing for me to do, just like we're doing, is to have a one-on-one conversation and start at the top. Mm-hmm. And you can rest assured I'm going to have that conversation. And I'm going to start, Erica, with women first that work at the NCAA office. You are there to represent, to fight, to do all those things. And I've got some detailed questions that I'm going to ask. And some of those questions have been asked publicly, but I've got more detailed ones because, see, I believe the only fair thing for me to do before I make a comment is to do my own work, my own investigation, and my own questioning. And I don't jump on board on anything until I know. And usually this is what is interesting. Usually when I make a statement, it's blunt. I don't say it politically correct. But what people don't understand is I've done my homework.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't have to agree with me, but I've done my homework.
Yep.
And that's where I stand today. I'm grateful for everything that we have. But I'm also a fighter.
Yeah, I agree. I respect that. I think that there's so often that people judge the book by the cover and they don't actually read the book, which just makes for like an aggravating argument. If I were those women, if I was running the NCAA and I knew you were gunning for me, I'd be scared shitless. So like that, I would make that statement about you. You're like a freight train. But I want
the truth, Erica, and I don't want to embarrass them. I don't want to cost them their jobs. I've been in situations where I've been attacked by the media and by statements that I've made. But you got to stand for something in life or you'll fall for anything. But I'm going to do my own investigation and my own work. And then I will be able to have a picture of, okay, this has got to be fixed. This person's got to be held accountable. And right now, I'm going to start with the women when I do start making those phone calls that work at the NCAA.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think that it seems, you know, I think one of the things that you would describe your coaching career as, and even your playing career, is substantive. And that's part of doing your research, being present, being ready to take on things. I think so much of what happens and plays out in the media is not substantive. And that's what really rings true and has any legacy to it. When you think about your legacy as a player and as a coach, what do you want that to be?
I don't know. I don't.
Are you so in it? You're like, fuck what everybody's going to say after I'm done.
Well, everybody's, you know, it's like belly buttons. Everybody's got an opinion. You know, that's what I say. Opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one. What I hope, and I don't know what they'll say. What I hope the people that were in my program, that worked for me, played for me, the administrators, is the woman did things right. The woman was always prepared. The woman won. The woman, you know, I just want to be judged by, was I a good person?
Yeah, the merit.
Was I a good person? Did I do things right? And did you win? And, you know, all the other things, whether it's political, whether it's whatever, that's what makes the world go round. We all have different opinions on all those things, but real, I want them to say, you know, she's honest. We might not like her honesty sometimes, but her heart is in the right place and she's honest. She has no agenda.
Kim, what would you say? We have a lot of people. We don't have a lot of NCAA basketball players who listen to this, I wouldn't say. But we do have a lot of women who are trying to make it in business and trying to make it in their career and trying to get up the ladder. And what would your advice be to them?
Well, you know, Erica, you're as good at helping with this as I am. You know, my degree was in business administration and I was working on that MBA and I wanted to fly all over the country and be a CEO of companies. Mm-hmm. Never thought I'd be a coach, never envisioned being a coach. And you started out with what, Fidelity. So mm-hmm. You know the business world. The business world is not as different as people think it is from athletics. It's just not. If you're a competitor, man, you want to get that account, man. You want to get that client and you want to climb that corporate ladder, but you want to climb it in such a way that you're doing climbing it the right way. Hell, we know a lot of people that climb ladders.
Yep,
doing a lot of things that are just not morally correct. But climb it the right way. Just do your work, work your ass off, and you'll be rewarded. I believe that. I grew up, parents, neither one of them went to college. Hell, they didn't even sign my report card. They didn't know if I made an A, a B, or a C. They just had enough belief in me that she's like a little grown woman here, you know, and she can, you know, she does her stuff right. And I would tell the people that want to be the CEOs of companies, go look at how many female CEOs there are now across this country. You know, that it's no different. Just be a competitor. Mm-hmm. Just look and say, who is my role model in my profession? And I want to be where that person is someday. Well, if that person can do it, why can't I do it? And have the confidence to go do it.
Were you a good practice player Or were you a game player? What kind of player were you?
I would say I learned to be a better practice player. You know, when you first get to college, you think you're all that.
Yeah.
And then you realize, well, hell, I didn't have to work this hard in high school on defense, or I didn't have to work this hard every day and the intensity. You learn it. And then, you know, you teach it. Freshman year is just, Lord, it's the toughest year of kids.
Yeah, it's
lives.
The worst. Yeah.
Oh, and worst. Even if you weren't an athlete, your freshman
it's the
year
worst
in college,
regardless.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a kick in the ass for sure.
It is. You're homesick. Yeah. You're learning how to wake yourself up. Nobody's cooking for you. It's tough. And then about your sophomore year, you figure it all out. Mm-hmm. Everything seems to start falling into place.
Speaking of sophomore year, like how do you deal with the sophomore slump? Like, what do you do with your players when they get into the slump? Like, do you ever get into a slump? How do you think about that?
Honestly, I have found with my program, we don't get into the sophomore slump. They get better because their freshman year is kind of really low for them. They hit rock bottom some. So now the summer between their freshman and sophomore year, they have like, okay,
I'm going to work.
Yes, I'm going to get in the weight room. I'm going to lose some weight. I'm going to gain some weight. I'm going to do all those things that just I had no clue about when I first got here as a freshman. And I find that their sophomore year is when they really turn the corner. What happens probably on the slump is when you just about get to that senior year, you get a little bit of, you know, I know it all. I'm getting tired of the coach. I'm, you know, so you probably don't work as hard.
Yeah.
So I have to challenge those upperclassmen, you know, sometimes and shake them a little bit to say, all right, you're getting senioritis here.
Yeah. You get a case of the like, yes. And then there's this hotshot freshman that shows up that runs twice as fast as you. And
there you go.
Yeah. So talk to me about the tournament. What's ahead for Baylor? How you feeling about it? What's next?
Well, you know, we got Michigan and, you know, I just have so much respect for their coach. I really, really like her. You know, she was at our place. First and second rounds are usually held on our campus. And 2 years ago, it was during Easter, and she has children, and I gave her children Easter baskets.
Wow.
So we get a good laugh about that. But she's just really a good coach, and her teams play the way you want all teams to play. They play hard. My team is just playing really motivated. They're really excited. You know, we're going to guard you. We're going to rebound. I can't tell you we're going to be the greatest offensive team every night, but if they can put together, you know, some more games here like they did the first two games, it's going to be fun to see how far we can go.
Awesome. I wish you the best of luck, Kim. It is an honor to connect with you. Thank you for doing this.
Hey, Erica, I'm not a social media person. I do have accounts. My coaches are in charge of it, but I got to tell you this quick story. My son plays for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Okay.
So he's going to, you know, he's in AAA. He's just right there, and he keeps up with everything. And when you asked my media relations person to do this interview, I was like, no, I don't want to get crucified out there. I said, I don't know what would, you know, just let me do my normal press conferences. And he said, just trust me on this. Ask your son, Kramer. So I text Kramer, and he didn't just answer me. He called me. You know, he's at spring training right now, and he's got these, you know, St. Louis Cardinals, major leaguers all around him. And I'll tell you exactly what he said. He said, F yeah, you're going to do that interview. Are you kidding me? And then he started rattling off y'all's names. Okay. Well, then later in the night, he had a meet and on a group text with all these young college guys that played college athletics. So don't count yourself short when you say college athletes are not keeping up with you, because I promise you they are. They keep me abreast of what I need to do. And he said, Mom, show her your, you know, comedy side. And I said, Kramer, I don't know her that well. He goes, tell her that's the one thing people don't know about you is you could be a stand-up comic. And he said, Mom, you're hysterical. Your players say you are nothing like people think you are. And I said, yeah, but you see, we don't tell that out in public because that's my competitive advantage. So you're loved. A bunch of young kids follow you. I mean, they're blowing my phone up now. When is she going to get out? When is it going to be aired? So keep doing what y'all are doing, and hopefully you'll holler back at me if we win this thing.
I'm going to holler back at you, Kim.
And holler back at me anytime. But I promise you, I will follow up. My word is my bond, just like my eyeballs. When I look you in the eye and I shake your hand, you can take it to the bank.
Take it to the bank. Thank you, Kim, so much.
Erica, good luck. Good. Take care.
I will. Bye.
Next up, we've got Brenda Fries, the 19-year head coach of the Maryland Terrapins.
Hi.
Hi, Erica. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great. Outstanding.
What's shaking?
Oh, just lots of film work.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm so fired up about this.
Yeah, so are we.
Do I call you Coach Fries or do I call you Brenda?
You can call me Brenda.
Oh, I love that. All right. You ready, Brenda?
I am.
So let's start with you are an icon in the state of Maryland. By everything that I have read to you, there will be many, many statues in your honor. You've been the coach of the Terps for 19 years, if I'm correct on that. So give us a sense of, you know, you've been at the top of the coaching heap for a long time. Now, how have you seen women's basketball, the NCAA tournament, your career change in the last 20 years, your coaching career change in the last 20 years and the sport?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I first could probably start when I was a player at Arizona. I was scouting and I saw La Tech just the last night and they were still in their uniforms with the sleeves. And I had a flashback how, you know, really it was only like the Final Four games that were on national television back when I was a player in Arizona that you got to watch and kind of have that vision, you know, as a young girl. And, you know, goodness gracious, you fast forward to 2021 and now our team and our program and women's basketball is on a national scale. I mean, you're on Big Monday on, you know, national scale on ESPN. Your games are televised, every game you can find on the internet and, you know, social media as well. I mean, you can, you just have a pulse on what everybody is doing, you know, in the country. And so it's exciting for young girls to kind of have that vision and that dream growing up that this is something that they can aspire to be.
And how do you feel, you know, what's been your secret to success over the last almost 20 years? Like you've coached innumerable girls, you've had powerhouse teams, you are a champion in your own right. What's been your secret to success, do you think?
Well, you know, I think, you know, first I would credit my parents. And, you know, I think it's really important that when, you know, you're authentic to yourself. I think sometimes people become head coaches and think they need to be, you know, like the, you know, person that mentored or modeled them. And, you know, for me, you know, the way I was raised, it was always about, you know, the humility and the work ethic. And so, you know, I work really, really hard. I mean, that's a living example I had with both of my parents and raising us six kids that they had and working two jobs. And then, you know, just, you know, staying humble. And I think the relationship piece, you know, you have to be able to have really strong relationships with your players, with your coaches, with your staff members. That you know, those are some really key pieces, I think, when you're talking about a big picture of a program.
Yeah, I love that. That really speaks to me. I felt that when I got my first CEO job, this job, everyone was like, oh, you should act different now. Like you should dress up, you should sit up straighter, you should say the F word less, like you should just like, and I'm like, you know what, like, I'm me, and I think that I can be successful and still be myself. And I think that's really, you know, everything I see about you and watching you, you feel very real yourself. I think your energy is real. Your passion is real. The mentorship you have for the team around you and your coaching staff is, to me, feels really distinct. I read something that you really love to give, you know, unproven talent a chance, which I'd love for you to talk to, where you'll give a great intern a rise to the top because he or she, you know, really earned it. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, I'm really fortunate. You know, first I'll say, you know, and loyal to, you know, the people in our program, and, you know, they're young budding stars that, you know, come through our program. So I think you could look at, you know, at our staff and our support staff. I mean, I could give you countless examples. We have our video coordinator who came in as a manager, you know, and worked his way through different positions in our program, and now heads our video and does just an incredible job, Joe Glowacki. My director of basketball operations, Libby Ellis, she came to camp and, you know, then came into Maryland, was a manager as well, came into our recruiting operations as a staff member after she graduated, and now is our director of basketball operations. And we've had scout guys, you know, same thing, that have, you know, then graduated on. So I'm very loyal to, you know, giving young people a chance. I have two young assistants that are under the age of 30. And, you know, again, they're Maryland girls, grew up with relationships, Lindsay Spann coming to camp, you know, Caitlin Frotz, you know, is from Maryland, bleeds Maryland. We had a connection through that. So I'm not, you know, I love it. Young people that are passionate about Maryland and this program, you know, have the same, you know, values that I have with work ethic and passion.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that one of the greatest things ever said about coaching is that it's not about the sport. It's that you are helping to raise, you know, young men, or in your case, young women, and really both. And I think that that's true here too at Barstool Sports, is we have a lot of young people. They're at a really interesting stage of their life. They're at interesting stages of their career. They have passion. And it's like, if you can harness that and help lift people up, I think the outcome is really incredible. Brenna, the other thing I wanted to talk about is you also have a very, I would describe you as radically transparent, which I also think is unique. And it's, I think, part and parcel with being authentic in a position of power, is that, you know, your practices are open. You're very open to the media. Give a little bit of a sense of your philosophy around just transparency and how that's worked for you and how that's worked for the program.
Yeah, you know, extremely well. I mean, I don't understand why people don't give all access. You know, at a really young time in my career, I had my sister, who's 2 years younger than me, was, you know, a sports anchor and with television, and just really wired me of that side of the media, that, you know, the media is not there to, you know, hurt you or harm you. They're there to tell your story. And, you know, I can't get out and speak to 10,000 people with my kind of time, but, you know, with a piece that is on television, is in the print, is on social media, I can get into so many households. And I think we have a lot of great things to be able to share, you know, about this team and this program. And so I am very pro anything, you know, access and social media, that you can get a feel and a sense of who we are and what our program's all about.
And how do you, so obviously there's a whole lot of drama right now with the NCAA. Congress is now getting involved. There's a lot of Title IX questions. Mark Emmert is on this hot seat for a whole number of reasons. Like, how do you, you know, I think one of the things that is great about what's happening in women's sports, and in women's basketball, really is the shining star from a WNBA perspective and certainly a college perspective, of there has been a lot of progress over the last 20 years. Is there enough? Like, fuck no. But tell me, how are you seeing what's happening? Because you're kind of in the eye of the storm. Like, your team is not using the weight room or using the weight room. So how do you see what's happening? How is that manifesting in the bubble? And how are you reacting to it, managing it, responding to it, whatnot?
Yeah. You know, my philosophy is, you know, there's always a lot more information that we're not privy to. So I think you have to understand that. And just, we're grateful, obviously, to be playing. And I think, you know, as a woman, we're always used to kind of seconds and, you know, being behind. So I am proud of the fact that, you know, these discrepancies have been, you know, layered and put out there. You know, there's a more global issue. You could talk about women doing the same job and making 70 cents right on the dollar. And, you know, it was 50 cents 40 years ago. So have we moved the needle? We have, but have we done it enough 40 years? I mean, how long is it going to take us to be equal for our gender? So, much pressing issues. I mean, it's a delicate balance because for us, I also don't want to get caught up in the noise because, you know, we're not using the weight room. We're right now, you know, focused on ourselves and the next game. And so, you know, it's also a delicate balance. You can get caught up in too much of that and lose your distraction of what you're here for.
Yeah. How do you manage that? You know, it's interesting. I think one of the most interesting things to happen as a result of this is that the story has really been broadcast from the players. When you look at, you know, I think Sedona is the number one reporter on the weight room and food situation. How do you keep your team focused and how do you keep the noise? How do you keep the noise out of your team? How do you as a head coach manage that?
Yeah, you know, we're open and honest and we talk about it. You know, but, you know, like you said, Sedona has already kind of taken that charge. So, you know, that's great. Let Sedona take that charge. And you know, obviously we agree with it, but at the same point, you know, we're focused on winning basketball games so we can continue to stay in this bubble and advance to the next round. But no question. I mean, as there's been big issues, you know, throughout this entire pandemic, you know, we've always, you know, had a safe space and been able to have great conversations.
That's great. And you guys are playing, you know, you're playing your heads off. I think you had 99 points in which game was that? You're averaging 99 points. So, which is, I would imagine there's nobody else, a men's team or a women's team, averaging 99 points. Do you know that?
I don't. I just know that we're playing really, really good basketball right now that, you know, we don't want to end. You know, we're on a 15-game win streak that, you know, it's been a very dominating win streak, about plus 30 through this stretch. So, you know, we're clicking at the right time and, you know, just wanting to be able to continue on, you know, through this tournament.
How do you not get complacent and arrogant? Like, you've been doing this for 19 years. You're awesome at it. Your team's crushing it. Like, are you doing the Bill Belichick, like everybody hates you and they're out to get you and they say you're going to lose the next game? Or how do you keep that edge when you're having so much success?
Yeah. You know, I have a highly, highly competitive team, you know, to the point, even practices, you know, we have to be delicate of how we create the practices. They're so competitive in everything. So, it's easy. I can find a nugget here and there that, you know, they latch on to, you know, if there is, you know, different things out there that we can talk about. But at the end of the day, this group, you know, I can call a timeout. And if we're having a lull in a 4-minute stretch, you know, it's really easy to tune this group right back in.
That's great. I love that. I play tennis with a friend and we play with this lady, which nobody cares about this story, but the coach is always like, we have to play 5 minutes of nice tennis where you can't try to just completely take somebody's head off with the ball. I hate that 5 minutes. Like, it's the biggest waste of time ever. It's like, if we're not counting points and if I can't take somebody's head off, I don't even know why I'm here. But sounds like your team is like that too.
Yeah, that wouldn't work for us. So yeah. We wouldn't be able to do those.
You're not doing nice drill. And what do you see ahead in the tournament? So talk a little bit about your schedule. You have a big game on this will air Tuesday. So you've had a big game Sunday night. What do you see? Like, who do you think the threats are? Who's formidable? What's in your head about the tournament?
Well, everyone is a great opponent at this time. I mean, when you're in a, you know, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four, national championship game, it's the best of the best. And we know that and we recognize that. So anyone can beat anyone. You know, it's the next 40 minutes. You have to be able to play your best basketball. So, you know, I think the reassuring thing is just the mindset of where this team is at. I know they're going to come out and pour their heart and their soul into the game and whatever happens, happens. But I love where our mindset is. You know, there's no motivating. This team has unbelievable chemistry. They're really focused and on a mission. So it's comforting as a head coach, as a leader, to know that you know your team's going to show up. You know your team's going to lay, you know, and give the best 40-minute effort they can give.
That's awesome. I wish you the best of luck, Brenda. You are such an inspiration. I'm excited for the rest of the tournament, and I really appreciate you coming on and giving us some of your time.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Erica, for having me, and I really appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
We'll see you in a little bit. Good luck on Sunday.
All right. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Finally, we have our 6'8 power forward from the Oregon Ducks, Sedona Prince. All right. You ready to do this?
Let's do it.
All right. I'm so excited about you. All right. We run a real informal process around here, Sedona. So you are my like spirit animal of the entire NCAA tournament. I think you are so fucking great.
Thank you.
Like you are awesome. Your energy is awesome. TikTok was made for you. Like you are just a delight. So give people who don't know who you are, where you come from, what makes you tick, like give them a sense of who you are.
So I am a 6'7" gay woman who's, I'm 20 years old. I'm from Austin, Texas, but I go to school in the University of Oregon and I play basketball there. I've had a lot of struggles with my leg and stuff. I broke it my freshman year and that kind of just like pushed me to get out of my comfort zone and start making videos online. And now I have a huge following just doing goofy things and trying to be my funniest and inspire people. And then kind of it blew up over the last couple of weeks because I, you know, kind of exposed the NCAA. Exposed the NCAA and their unfairness towards women and how they treat women in sports. And now I have even bigger following and a bigger platform that I've
used. How many followers did you gain?
About 500,000 on TikTok, about 150,000 on Instagram, and like almost 30,000 on Twitter. So every social just blew up, which is crazy because like, I mean, it's not big for followers to me. It's just like how I can spread a message and help people. And so it was pretty cool to have a bigger platform.
It's amazing. I mean, yeah. Forget going into your DMs. Your DMs must be like a dumpster fire or like a gold mine.
Yeah, all the brands are reaching out to me. And I'm like, I can't respond because I'm still an NCAA athlete. Like there's still rules that I can't even get like endorsements.
You are like 1 year, one state short. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That sucks.
I know. Yeah. But it's okay. Once I graduate, I'll have it all. So it'll be good.
You will have it all. You will have it all. And then some. Okay. So I'll tell you why I'm obsessed with you. I think you're just amazing. I think your energy is amazing. I think you are such a natural storyteller. Your exuberance is like your humor and exuberance is just contagious. And I think it comes through. And I really loved how you became the whistleblower and the story and the SNL skit and late night television of the entire NCAA debacle. Like you did that so effortlessly. Like, do you think it's because you've had so much practice since freshman year telling your story on TikTok? Like, how did that come together for you?
Yeah. So before I came to the tournament, I was like, I really just want to document like how the process is because I knew that a lot of athletes were going to do that. But I've always been good at like documenting and telling my story and doing it effectively and like getting the point across as best as I can. And so I was like, I'm going to do like the best I can. I'm going to be funny. I'm going to show my personality. Like, this is how I'm going to optimize, you know, kind of the publicity at NCAA. Like I'm going to spread light on women's tournament as well. And then when all this stuff came out about the weight room and stuff, I was like, man, this is not right. And so I made a video, not even thinking anything of it. And I tweeted it out as well because TikTok, like it wasn't doing very well on TikTok. Yep. And I was like, let me just tweet it out because Twitter's good at like that kind of stuff. And then I woke
up real time for people who are angry. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I woke up with like 110,000 retweets and I was like, okay, let's go. And so then I just had like every post, everyone was like, oh, keep going. And so I was like, all right, I just keep like showing details and the COVID testing and every little detail people were just obsessed with. So it became pretty cool.
And what did your coaches and your teammates say? Like, were they for you? Or are they like, oh, you're an attention hog? Like, what are they saying?
No, they were, I remember talking to my coach and he was like, hey, like, I'm so proud of you. Like, keep pushing. Your voice is so powerful. And all my teammates were like into it. They would like help me do, they wanted to be a part of my TikToks. And so we would like taste test food together and we would goof around. And I remember when I hit a million, I came into the film room and I was the last person in there and they had congrats balloons up and they bought,
you're an influencer.
So, yeah. So they were so happy for me. Cause like it's been a long journey. And so they were really, really, really proud of me for like using my voice.
Oh, I thought you did such an amazing job. You know what else? I just couldn't stop watching you. And I think, you know, like I've gotten into it with like the women's hockey set. Like I think it's creating visibility and conversation can provoke change, right? Everybody knows that. I think that, and it's what I think you have a unique way about you, though, is that you showcased a pretty major injustice. Like, it was egregious. The weight room was fucking insulting. The food was embarrassing, I would say, at best. The COVID test is just, like, rude. But you did it in a way where you weren't harping and negative. You were still Sedona. Like, I still felt like you were positive and bubbly and raised a lot of questions from which people drove their own conclusions. And I think that that's – you have such a future in that. Like, do you think about your future after playing? Like, do you think about yourself as a broadcaster? I think you're a broadcaster.
Thank you. Yeah. I think my, like – my kind of mentality going into it was, so I made a video before that weight room TikTok, and I was like kind of angry about it, and I was like, look how ridiculous this is, this is unfair, this is not how it's supposed to be. And then I went through the whole practice with, I'm like, I'm not gonna post it, I'm gonna wait, I'm gonna cool down a little bit. And I went through the whole practice, yeah, and I was like let me come at it from more of like a reporter standing on it, you know, like let me just show what's going on and let people take their own opinions from that, and then open the conversation more and not really like start it and fuel it and just be more angry about it, which would just shut people.
Yeah, I think that's right. Minds off.
And so that's where like, I tried to come from that standpoint of just like, hey, this is what's going on. Now talk about
it. I totally agree. I think that what people get wrong on Twitter in particular, it's interesting that it took off on Twitter, not on TikTok, because your other stuff really takes off on TikTok, is that the conclusion you draw becomes the thing that people react to, versus what I think you did very well is the fact that you didn't have the condemnation in the, I mean, it was condemning. It was a damning video, but the fact that you left it open, I think allowed it to travel much further, because then the conversation would have been about you and your opinion versus the fact that the NCAA is saying that there isn't enough room for a weight room and you're basically in a cavern the size of Texas with nothing in there. So has anyone from the NCAA reached out?
I talked to the head of the NCAA when I was at the tournament. My coach introduced us and she was just like, hey, like you did an amazing job. Like we're going to keep working on this stuff. And I was like, you know, I mean, it was amazing. The response that they had to it was what we needed. They apologized and they fixed it literally the next day. They fixed it in a matter of like 5 or 6 hours. They built a weight room.
I thought it looked like a W hotel weight room. I didn't think it was that great.
Yeah, but it looked a little bit like homecoming, like a prom.
For sure, with like the blue light coming up the curtain. I'm like, how about just have more fucking weights? They don't need curtains and like ambient lighting. It's not like you want to feel romantic when you're lifting weights.
Yeah. It felt a little bit like showy, but it was all good. Like the it was in good intentions and they just wanted to give it to us and you know, kind of quiet the media a little bit, but it worked. And yeah, that was the only response we were hoping for, was just to not even say sorry, just to provide action and to say, hey, we apologize. We see the mistakes we made. We built the weight room and now we're not going to do it in the future for future generations at the NCAA. So that's all we wanted. And it worked.
That's amazing. And so what's next for you?
Taking a little break for sure.
Okay.
It's been a crazy couple weeks, but I got invited to AmeriCup USA trials, and so I might go do that and just continue playing basketball and telling my story. And then back to Oregon for training and getting ready.
Are you going
to
get an agent? What are you going to do?
I can't get an agent under NCAA rules until I graduate, but yeah, so just gonna keep working.
Womp, womp.
I know. Can't be a professional yet, but gonna keep doing stuff. And I'm suing the NCAA right now for a different reason. So I'm going to continue doing that. So a lot of stuff.
Okay. What are you suing them for?
For athlete compensation. It's for like the NIL. So like I can't make money off my name, image, and likeness. And so I'm suing them to pretty much say that like athletes should be able to make money off of, let's say, my TikTok, for instance. Like I should be able to get sponsorships and show a product in a video and then make money off of that. Or even like make merch and make t-shirts with my name on it and sell that, and then make money. Cause that's the brand I've built is so big and it deserves to be, you know, monetized off of.
It also is your brand is, so we've talked about that here. And I agree. I think this is Look, I think the NCAA is almost a predatory operation. First of all, you must have saw that your coach must have introduced you, and this lady was like, thanks for blowing up my spot and like suing my ass. That would have been funny. So, and you must have been so much taller than her, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So were you like towering over her like, I will kill you? I doubt you said that. You seem much nicer than me. But wait, so that's interesting because to be honest with you, your following is so massive. I mean, that's a multi-million dollar annual business that you have in your phone, which has very little to do, frankly, with your basketball ability. Mm-hmm. And think of all the people who are just interested in your perspective on the world, and you can't do that just because you play basketball
right
at a collegiate level. That's ridiculous. Okay, are you part of a class action, or are you doing this by yourself?
It's class action. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's exciting. What else you got going on?
Oh,
are you gonna write a book?
That's pretty much it. Maybe one day in the future. I think I'll just stick to being a kid for now. I like just fishing and, you know, hanging out with friends and stuff. It's pretty fun.
And do you go back to Texas when you're not in Oregon or playing hoops?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in Texas right now. So I live like right outside of Austin. So I've just been to chill here. I think I'm going downtown a little bit and, you know, just hanging out, just being.
Have you ever been to a Torchy's?
Oh my goodness. Have I ever been to a Torchy's?
So good, right?
You know what my order is?
No, what's your order?
Trashy Trailer Park. I guess three of them. It's like the one with the fried chicken and queso in it.
Do you know about the secret menu though? Oh, there's a whole secret menu, Sedona.
I'm gonna have to go there today.
Yeah, go today and be like, I'm Sedona and I'm famous. What's your secret menu? You could at least probably get like a free taco out of it. All right. On that note, have a great lunch. And thanks for doing this. I'm rooting for you. I think you're awesome. Like, you are just an awesome person. You can bet on girls through the end of the NCAA tournament. We've got some awesome bets and some huge boosts for everybody in Illinois, Pennsylvania, or Michigan. So keep an eye out for those. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast.